part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
All right, are we all here?
I think so.
Corey was Dormammu. Being affected by the dread Dormammu, trying to connect to Corey, and we couldn't connect. Luckily, Jay pulled out the eye of Agamotto, and
that's right
to communicate. Okay, so obviously we are all here to discuss the Doctor Strange movie that just. Open this weekend. This is Part-Time Fanboy. Mm-hmm. My name is Christian Horn, and I am here with almost a full house. We have Corey Blake on the line. We have Jay Holtham on the line, and we have Ian Scheller on the line. Wow. We are all on the line. Big. Only the Marvel movies can pull us together this way, guys. Anytime a Marvel movie comes out, everyone's like, oh my God. Let's do this. Let's talk about
it. Much like the Avengers.
Yeah, much like the Avengers. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Maybe the Great Lakes Avengers. That's what we are. I don't know. In any case, this is Part-Time Fanboy, Doctor Strange. What'd you guys think? I'm thinking there's some enthusiasm on the line. I'm not sure. What did everyone think? Who wants to go? I guess let's start with Corey since he's the left icon on my screen, Skype screen right now.
It's definitely the best way to make decisions.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought like visually the most interesting and most entertaining Marvel movie. Bumbercatch, who's a bots, whatever his name is.
Oh, Benedict Cumberpatch.
It was great. You know, he was a great Doctor Strange, much like Robert Downey Jr., who really like redefined Tony Stark and actually made the character like added elements to the character that made it all suddenly click after, you know, 60 years or whatever. I thought he kind of did the same thing with Stephen Strange, where a lot of little touches, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into all this stuff, but, you know, just like a lot of little touches that made the character, where before he was just sort of, detached and sort of, I don't know, not much of a personality.
In the comics.
And so now it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's his personality. And yeah, that totally makes sense and fits for his origin story. And so, there was, you know, I guess we'll get to it, but the end left me a little bit like just the last little flavor in my mouth was sort of a little like,
Oh, I
like
love missed, the end. Yeah,
it missed something. Like the final battle and everything was great, but just those little epilogue scenes were just like,
I don't know.
Like they were fine, but it's that thing of like, you know, you have to leave them wanting more, and it kind of left me like, why did those scenes happen?
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, yeah, it was really fun and I really enjoyed it. I was glad we went.
Okay. Jay, what did you think?
Much the same. Like I enjoyed it honestly more than I expected to. I didn't go into this, sort of jaded. I'm still pretty excited. I feel like I'm one of the last people who's still pretty excited about a Marvel movie coming out and still sort of jazzed about it. But this was one that I was most kind of nervous about because Doctor Strange is so weird and like the origin is so sort of like such a straight line that I was like, I don't really know how this is going to work. You know, he gets his hands hurt. He goes to some, you know, ancient people. They teach him magic. And then he becomes the Sorcerer Supreme. I know very, very little about the comics. I was vaguely aware of Dormammu and vaguely aware of Mordo and what they did. So I was like, I don't know what to expect from this. And it really sort of delivered. I mean, it delivered what I feel like the Marvel movies deliver, which is a couple hours. It's entertaining. It's surprisingly funny. And interesting. Visually, it is stunning.
Yeah.
Really, really stunning.
I agree.
On Facebook, I compared it to, I referred to it as the Matrix movie we were promised and never got.
Yeah.
And I stand by that, that it's what I wanted those sequels to be in terms of just mind-bending and reality-bending, sort of Inception-y in that, but still even more interesting. And yeah, it's a, you know, it's got a good beat. You can dance to it. Like, I don't feel like it, you know, changed my world or blew my mind, but I'm like, that's a nice, solid movie.
Yeah,
yay,
yeah.
Marvel.
Yeah. How about you, Ian?
Well, I actually had a great time. I too, like Jay, you know, I never read a Doctor Strange book. I only read...
Never? Ever?
I read Infinity Gauntlet, but he's a little part in that. Or Infinity War, whatever that was. And I only read that a few years back just because the experience I've been having with these Marvel movies is... I feel like I've been able to appreciate comics and characters I never really read because the only Marvel stuff I was really reading was Incredible Hulk. I'm not was never into the Avengers in print, was never into X-Men, was never into Doctor Strange, was never into Thor. And I feel like I'm really getting to experience a lot of this stuff for the first time, and I'm loving it. I think, again, they've nailed it. I don't know if it's the best one they've ever done, but there was really only two critiques I had that probably were minor. And just to get those out of the way, I'm sure we'll talk about them. I thought he needed to break down when he was trying to get back into to ask for help to be taught.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the emotional, and it's, I mean, obviously this guy can act his way out of more than a paper bag. I mean, yeah, this guy's amazing. Yeah. I feel like he displayed that emotion when he had a scene later with the girl in the hospital. But I wanted to see him really want that teaching more. And I almost thought that maybe there was something in the editing. And the only other thing was I was like, he was standing toe to toe with, and I'm going to say it wrong, I'll just say Mads Mikkelsen. He was standing toe to toe with that guy pretty early on in his training, I thought. And I know he got help from one of the best characters now in the Marvel universe, his cloak.
Yeah.
Cloak
of levitation.
That, you know, obviously, you know, that those are two small things, you know, but my jaw was dropping. I was having a great time. And yes, visually, it seems I want to see it in 3D now. And I never.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because it seems like they did some stuff and then someone was like, OK, great. Now take it 100 times further than
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Let's turn it up to 11. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Guys, I do think it's a great movie. I think and I just think it delivers, and I just think it reinforces the whole, you know, things we've been saying about Marvel. I think they're doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, much like a lot of you guys, like Doctor Strange was never, I would pick up, much like maybe like Iron Fist or Heroes for Hire, like Doctor Strange was kind of always C-level. You know what I mean? He was never, to me, considered like one of the prime like movers of the Marvel Universe, even though he was created, you know, by Steve Ditko and Stan Lee and like was one of the early creations of the Marvel Universe. He wasn't like an also-ran, you know, that came along like late in the 70s or 80s or anything. But it was just something that I never glommed onto. I would pick up a book here and there. He would show up like in other books, like providing advice. And Corey hit the nail on the head. His personality was always kind of dry and always kind of a little bit of a bore. Yeah, aloof.
Yeah.
Like not really somebody that you could connect with in any way in any of the books that I read. And it's really funny because, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch is obviously British. And Doctor Strange, even though in the comics he is not like British, he always, in my mind, spoke with that sort of affected, you know, old movie British accent, like where he was like, he was, you know, like in Spartacus, they all talk like this, and hello, like he would speak very properly. So there was a part of me that wanted to see a little bit of that sort of like affected English accent come out of him. But as a whole, like Jay, I think you nailed it. Like there is a part of me, because when I saw the trailer, there's definitely like, what they're doing Inception, you know, and then I had the suspicion that, like, no, this is Marvel. They're only giving you the tip of the iceberg, you know, and they definitely were only giving the tip of the iceberg. I think that this movie really took the technology of stuff like The Matrix and Inception and basically was like, okay, let's just go all the way. Like, how far can we go with this? And especially in those mystical scenes or like the scenes where he gets thrown into other dimensions early on by the Ancient One, like they just pulled out all the stops. There was nothing in the movie that I felt was like wholly like original or like anything that I hadn't really seen before a bit someplace else. But I feel like what they took, they improved upon and like blew through the roof. You know what I mean?
Yeah, very much. Yes,
I was really worried about like Jay. You were talking about seeing the trailer and things like that, and I was kind of worried too. Like I love Steve Ditko, and I really wanted it to be very faithful to his visuals and things like that. And while they definitely with like things like the dark dimension and that scene, Christian, that you mentioned earlier in the beginning, where he's passing through all these dimensions, that's for sure Ditko. Although I would also say Jim Starlin as well. But
yeah.
Part of me, I wishes it was a little more Steve Ditko-y, but also part of me is like glad it wasn't, that they just sort of like, we acknowledge it and we're just going to make it its own thing, our own take on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And the visuals just were so, we just went so out there in a different way that it was that much more enjoyable for me.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I know that I've heard fans, you know, complain like, this isn't Jack Kirby enough, this isn't Steve Ditko enough. And I'm like, well, I get what you're kind of saying, but at the same time, like a lot of that stuff is just sort of like, I don't want to say like rushed or, you know, it's just some of it can be like had this feeling of being like slapped together sort of at the last minute, you know what I'm saying? And like kind of out there, but I mean, coherent and works, but it's stuff that wouldn't necessarily always work in three dimensions, you know what I'm saying? Or seeing it move on the screen. And while I agree with Corey that I probably would have liked to seen like maybe more floating islands or whatever, like out in the distance or something. They definitely, like there's that one moment where like three of Mads Mikkelsen's like people get like thrown into the dark dimension towards the end and they sort of get turned into the people with one eye, like in the dark dimension, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like those black creatures with the glowing eye. And I was like, oh my God, like they actually went back to that. You know what I mean? So it's almost like me wanting to see the leader and his like, you know, those pink guys that showed up in the Hulk that the Hulk would pound on and they would just be like rubber and they never bring them in the movies. Like that's sort of what that moment gave me where I was like, okay, I saw it. Like you gave me a taste of it and I've been a fan and I've seen this in the comic book. So I'm good. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's what the Marvel movies tend to excel at, which is like, we're not going to embrace like all the old stuff completely 100%, which maybe they can or cannot do. You know, that's an argument for fans to hash out. But they give you just enough to where if you're an old school fan, you're like, oh, yeah, I know what that is. You know what I mean?
Right. That's what makes That's what makes those Marvel movies so nice is you get that as a diehard. They reward you. They reward you if you're a diehard. They reward you if you're a casual, you know, fan of it. If you don't know zero, you'll still have a good time at this thing. And I think they did actually use the Ditko stuff and a lot of the original stuff as a baseline. But when you've got, you know, the CG people they're using and someone's like, hey, I could duplicate his face a gazillion times and send him through space and it looks awesome. You know, what do you say except, hey, let's do that.
Yeah, I definitely would rather, you know, like it's an adaptation. It is not a recreation. And so, in the end, while the nostalgic part of me is like wants Ditko to just be like praised and mimicked and that sort of thing. And ultimately, yeah, I want it to be satisfying and I want them to be as creative as possible and to use it as the inspiration, not as the stuck in the rails of the road. So
yeah.
I totally.
You know, another note on the whole Ditko thing. Do you guys remember that drawing of Dormammu where – because I thought they did this great with Dormammu where there's a rendering of him in the comics. You know, it's like a purple face and there's these vertical lines, right, that go
– his head's on fire.
Well, his head's on fire.
But the way they used that and created this sort of overlapping thing with him I thought was a really good choice.
I wanted to see the firehead.
You missed the firehead?
I missed the firehead. What did you say, Corey?
I was missing the fire, but I did like that sort of like cascading effect you're talking about.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I thought that was fine. And like, especially being so large, I'm sure that in, you know, number two, when Dormammu comes to our dimension, they'll like shrink him down and it will look like his head's on fire.
Right.
Or something to that effect.
We were just seeing the big head.
There was a part of me, and my wife actually said like she thought he kind of looked like Groot. Like he was like really big. Mm-hmm. Like there's definitely this thing that bugs me in movies sometimes where it's like you meet the ultra dimensional being and it's just like this giant nebulous like there were a little bit shades of like Galactus Cloud from like the second Fantastic Four movie where I was like why can't we just have him be a dude like who's badass and scary like I kind of missed that, but like it didn't ruin it for me. I was like, all right, especially with the way that scene when Dormammu is like finally, and obviously we're skipping ahead to the ending. Spoilers so for anyone, pissed. You know, Dormammu, the way that the final climax played out was one of the bits of the movie that I just loved. I thought it was like, this is fantastic. But before we jump to that, like Ian, you said something like really interesting, and it is one of the bits that I kind of wanted to see more of in the movie, which is the breakdown of him like reaching his final point, which I feel like you're right. I feel like there wasn't enough like rock bottom, but then I also feel that there wasn't enough time to see how much of a jerk he was. You know what I mean? I feel like he did not mistreat people enough or dismiss them enough to have been like kind of like you didn't see the full turn from like absolutely loathsome like rich dude, you know, dick to, you know what I'm saying, to like redemption.
That scene with the nurse there where she comes to help him in his apartment and he's just that got a groan in the theater when he like completely dissed her. It was like okay, this is over for you two. I thought it was pretty well established that he's a selfish
jerk. That felt good enough. I felt like he didn't need to be loathsome. Like I never thought of like Doctor Strange as or in his like prior life as loathsome. You know, any more than Tony Stark is loathsome pre Iron Man. Like he's a jerk. You're like, that dude's a jerk. But he's also good at what he does, and you can see why he is a jerk. Like, I was with you. The same thing in my theater. Yeah, that. I can't remember what that line was. We had some line about like,
she was like, there's more to life than, you know, success or whatever. And he was like,
everyone in the theater was like, we all physically recoiled about that's just awful, man. I don't know how you come back from that ever.
I mean, I just felt like that was like a really big bad lover spat, and he had already he was spiraling into what I wanted to see more of, like before he has the accident, was the sort of thing where it's like, this guy's kind of a little bit of a douche, like, you know what I mean? And that's kind of like the way I always felt like Doctor Strange may have been before that, where his ego is just like out of control, and he is good at it, but he's definitely one of those people that he definitely sees himself above others to a certain extent. You know what I mean? Neither here nor there.
Poor Michael Stuhlbarg being just like, you're just shown up at every point. I don't know. That was enough for me. For me, I was definitely like, okay, I can see why this guy sort of deserves his comeuppance. And hey, He also rejected helping Rhodey. So let's all just remember that.
Wait, rejected helping Rhodey? What did I miss?
He totally rejects helping when he's in the car right before the car accident. It's one of the great little Easter eggs. They're going through all these cases, and they're like a spinal case from a guy in a mechanized suit. And I'm like, that's totally Rhodey. And he's like, nope, not interested.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's probably I missed it because I was terrified of the accident coming up because my kid was in the theater and I'm like, how bad is this going to be, man? How bad am I about to traumatize my child with this? Like, I was definitely like,
How did she take it? Because it's pretty bad.
Well, it's really interesting because I think that the trailer showed bits that were not in the movie because in the trailer they show him like the water going up, and I think extended it a bit. And in this one, it was like over really fast. Obviously, she's scared. We kind of prepped her for it. Like I told my wife, well, looks like there's a car accident and stuff like that. But by the end of the movie, she just loved it. So she was just like so into it. And I also think that that is very much a thing of like, I'm getting to see a grown-up movie, you know? So, but you know, it was scary. I mean, obviously it's a shocking scene, but I expected it to be a little bit more drawn out than it was because in the trailer, that's what it looked like. Like I'm drowning, I'm stuck in the car. Like this is really scary, and I felt like it was scary, and you know, close your eyes, and then it was kind of over. You know what I mean?
But you want him to be loathsome. How much more loathsome can a human being be than texting and driving?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that was one of the things. That was one of the things that I had a little bit of a problem with. That this guy's like this brilliant neurosurgeon, and he's burning, you know, up into the mountains of like what New York, New Jersey, and it starts raining and he doesn't even slow down and he's going through the case. I'm like, wow, this guy is definitely pulling a Ben Carson where he's like the most brilliant neurosurgeon on the planet, but his synapses do not connect on all other things. You know what I mean?
There was though that pacing though you talk about where things started to get pretty harebrained, but then it kind of moved along, and that was really my point. Was that so he's outside and they said it with words. They're like, well, he's been out there for whatever, you know, 8 hours or 2 days. But I never really saw him just sit there and get completely defeated and just completely break down. And I made the joke today with one of my friends that because my friend was like, I wanted to see him in just studying with the ancient one for years. And I go, yeah, it was more like a Tony Robbins thing.
No, but here's the thing. Oh, no, but here's the thing is that they did, first of all, it's like a very much a montage like happens or an extended montage. But the thing that I caught is in the beginning, Rachel McAdams' character, in the beginning of the movie, she's a nurse. And then when he returns, she's a doctor. Right. And I asked, I missed that too. Yeah, no, I asked my wife about it last night and she's like, no, she was always a doctor. And then I asked somebody else at work and she was like, no, in the beginning of the movie, she's a nurse. And then when he comes back, she's a doctor. So I agree with you guys that because there was a part of me that I was like, this really seems like he's doing this quickly. But that was their little sort of like pin in going...
I figured that like a lot of time was passing because you know his temples were graying and things like that. I mean,
he does age. It's subtle, but it would have liked. I'm with you on Ian on the like just that particular moment of him being out there. It really was like he pounded on the door and then all of a sudden he was inside. And I'm like, come on, give us something.
She wipes his mind completely, and then in a second he's like, teach me. But it's like, it's not. I mean, dude, a trip like that. I mean, we've all had experiences on alcohol, probably, where you need a couple days to recover.
Well, he says, what did you put in that tea? Which I thought was he was like hallucinogens. Right. Like, what did you put in that? Right. So I thought that was a really nice touch, and I thought he was going to be, to your point, Ian, a little bit more in denial, a little bit longer, which I think, but you know, it's like a 2-hour movie. I guess
it is.
They had a lot to stick in there, you know?
And And after Civil War, really, you know,
it didn't feel it to me. It doesn't feel nearly as long as Civil War. Or as exhausting as it is.
It's really interesting. I thought the pacing was really good. I felt like, you know, the character development was like spot on. They spent enough time with everyone. Obviously there were certain things rushed, but I think that this is sort of like the first Marvel character that had to learn a whole new skill set to get his powers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He doesn't get bitten by a spider. He doesn't build like a super suit of armor in a week or whatever because he's already a super genius. This is the first Marvel character that's like, man, I got to go back to school and I got to study and I got to get like my PhD in mystical arts again. Like, this is bogus, you know? So I think that they definitely had to sort of like push through that. But the one thing that that I enjoyed, and maybe they should have done to explain it away, especially with the way that he faces off against Mad Michelson's character, the villain in the piece, they mm-hmm. did not, and I was thankful of it, but maybe they needed to do it. They did not pull that Harry Potter BS where it's like, you're the anointed one, you know, which in the comics they kind of do. They never did that, like, you are the foretold one, like, you are the one that we've been waiting for, which I was so happy, because that can get like really cheesy to me after a while. I mean, you can do it, but like, I was just very happy that they were like, okay, this is kind of like another one of our students. They never went to that place where he's like, this guy's like super special, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of that where they, I think Mordo like mentioned like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be able to do that.
And, yeah.
You know, but you're right. It wasn't like, you know, oh, like he didn't even, I thought he was going to become the Sorcerer Supreme at the end of the movie, but he didn't. He's just like the guardian of the New York sanctum, you know? And so, so yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like he became like the big leader and ruler of everything in one movie, which is good. I like that.
Who was the Sorcerer Supreme at the end? I guess they didn't say.
Yeah, no, nobody. It's the,
they didn't say.
The elections have not yet happened.
Well, I mean, the other thing that I really enjoyed too was, especially sort of like building up to the climax, was very much how we end. Well, okay, so first of all, I love the bit in like the Greenwich Village apartment. Like the cape stuff was a little too cutesy for me, but I was like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, I'll go with it. I don't remember. I mean, I actually looked it up in my old Marvel handbooks of the Marvel Universe. There's nothing about the cloak being like sentient or having a personality, but who knows? Yeah. That's probably changed since the 80s. But I love that whole fight sequence and that whole bit.
It was great.
It was really fantastic stuff. The astral projection stuff in the hospital was great. Just the
That was terrific.
Yeah, just like all that stuff that call back to the comics. But the thing that really, really stuck out for me was like when the fight's over and like all these things are being said about the Ancient One and like everyone's kind of like arguing a little bit about, like, you know, Mads Mikkelsen is kind of planting doubt in his head and Baron Mordo or whatever is like at the end of that, like, I was like, okay, I just kept thinking like, he's fighting, he's gonna kill this guy, he's a doctor, he has an oath, like, is that gonna come up? And then he says like, I am not into this, like, my first oath is first do no harm. And when I heard that, I was like, all right, like, this is, he's going to be different. It's different than like a regular adventurer who's like, I'm just going to throw down and we're going to fight. And this is the way, like, I really enjoyed the fact that they developed that aspect of his character to where it's like, okay, maybe I'm going to think a bit more than Thor or Captain America, or, you know what I mean? Like, I can fight, but, you know, but then at the same time, I was really glad that they sort of made him a bit more of a man of action than he was in the comics. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it pays off well. I thought that was another great thing about the end, was that, like, it's so great how, because that normal ending, you do expect him to, like, go and, you know, kill Dormammu or destroy Dormammu
Ass. Yeah, yeah.
Or kill, you know, do all that. And it was really great that he bargained.
Yeah,
and he sacrificed himself, which was nice.
Yeah,
and it was smart, and that was very cool.
Yeah,
yeah, I think there's a lot in that movie that's, again, it's subtle, but I read like the director made a conscious choice that there would be no guns in the movie, and
that's great.
So there's a lot of like sort of, you know, obviously it's action packed. It's an action movie. It's a superhero movie.
Sure.
So I can't really say it's not violent, but, you know, but but it does try and eschew violence as a solution, I think, or at least, you know, the characters try to, or make an effort to, you know. So I respected that. Like, I thought that, like you say, like, Jay, like, he went about resolving the problem of the whole movie in a unconventional way for a Marvel movie.
I love that ending, especially I laughed out loud when Dormammu goes, "What is this?"
Yeah. What is happening?
He has a breakdown. He's like, "What the hell are you doing?" I laughed out loud. I thought it was so awesome.
Yeah. It's really funny because here we go again is you know, the end of the movie, I mean, obviously we're skipping ahead and we need to talk about the Ancient One because, I mean, Tilda Swinton was like, I mean, she was amazing. Like, I can't even, you know, like, there's definitely the issue of sort of like whitewashing and stuff like that. I really don't feel like there was a need to sort of change the character in that way. But when you see what she does with it and the sort of like, first of all, it's like she's a clone of David Bowie. I don't care what you guys say. Yes. Like I was like, oh, yes, my God. Is. Even seeing her play the Ancient One, I kept thinking like, Bowie? Like, I was just like, what is going on? Like, Labyrinth? Like, and so there was that aspect, but she really, like, imbued that character, like, became, like, something unearthly, you know what I mean? I thought that was fantastic. I thought she was amazing.
She really was. Great. And like, I'm so iffy about this, because obviously whitewashing, bad. They could have still achieved this goal, but with an Asian actress or something. But it's also still, to their credit, I mean, they cast a woman, and they cast, you know, Chiwetel Ejiofor as Mordo, and like, and also made him not the villain, and made him even going forward, sort of a noble villain, which is nice, like a reasonable. Sort of like, I can absolutely understand why you would A, be pissed, and B, to be doing what you're doing, because that's kind of right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was just so good. And like, the part is so good. The part is just so interesting and more interesting than I expected it to be, because again, you get more personality. You expect the Ancient One to just sort of be, you know, fortune cookies.
Yeah.
And, pronouncements. And she wasn't, like, it was a real part.
Yeah. I thought it was.
Did you know that she was in a movie with David Bowie called The Stars Are Out Tonight?
No.
In 2013.
Oh, wow. I need to watch it because it'll be like, too much Bowie. It'll be Bowie overload.
Did she just absorb him into her consciousness?
Yeah, she must have.
She's like Ragman. Everyone she acts with.
To her costume. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I mean, I felt that she did like a really amazing job. And Jay, you're absolutely right. Like, I love the way that they veered away from the sort of like thing that it could have become, which is like the stick up the butt, like Ancient One. And this was very much like, it's really interesting. I really feel like she pulled off the whole, like, well, he's kind of got to discover it for himself. You know what I mean? There's no like path that I'm going to lead you on. It wasn't Yoda, you know what I mean? But it also wasn't sort of like ancient Chinese secret. You know what I mean? It definitely balanced the line. And she also gave it sort of a peacefulness and a welcoming quality. You know what I mean? Because you could have easily turned that character into like, this is the way to do it. This is strict. Like, you are to take this seriously. And they didn't do any of that at all. And again, it all, you know, spoilers, it culminates in her death scene, which, you know, I think this is the first Marvel movie that kind of brought like tears to my eyes a little bit, because there's so much, like, there's a bit of Eastern mysticism mixed in here, but not, it doesn't bang you over the head. But that one scene where she says, like, you never find out what it's all about or something. And he's like, well, what is it? And she like just gently turns to him and she's like, that it's not about you. And I'm like, whoa, you know what I mean? I was like, if that's not a lesson that people just keep to relearning over and over again, that, you know what, it's, you know, it's not all about what you want. You know what I mean? And it's just like, that I thought that was just a beautiful, and the lightning in the sky and everything, like just where she slows down time and is trying not to let it, you know, dissipate. I thought that was a beautiful moment in, you know, what is an action movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a beautiful scene.
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah. She really was. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's like, she was way better than you would expect for that, for that type of a role. And it was even written better than you would expect. I also read that they, because I felt very uncomfortable with the whole whitewashing thing of that role. And they apparently the explanation was that they felt like that character, as originally conceived, was a racial stereotype, and so they wanted to recast it to try and avoid that. And then I guess initially Wong was not in the movie. That character was not in the movie at all. And so now they're like, okay, great. In a way to try and avoid being offensive, we've completely been offensive by whitewashing the whole movie.
Oh, that's interesting. That's great.
And adding Wong as they did, because
He was great.
The cast is fantastic. And Marvel, once again, is not just casting A-list actors. They're giving thought to who these people could really play. And unlike another major company who's not doing that, who's really just, I feel, plugging people in because they have access to them. I mean, you've got to do some thinking to put Tilda Swinton in that role. You've got to do some thinking to, put Benedict Cumberbatch there, I think, and even I really appreciated they had Scott Adkins in this movie. I don't know if you guys are Scott Adkins fans. He was the guy who fought him in the hospital. This guy is one of the greatest martial artists in the world.
Oh, really?
Right now. Yeah. Really? And he didn't show a ton of martial arts, but this guy is phenomenal. I would suggest doing a search on him. He's been in tons and tons of stuff as a lead, doing just phenomenal work. I think he's Australian. But this cast, I mean, you look at this cast, and it's real. When Mads Mikkelsen sells that, a speech that we've really heard, there's certain, obviously, there's customs and there's, ceremony within a lot of these scripts in that we're going to hear a bad guy say a certain style.
He's gonna monologue. Yeah. He's got a monologue.
But the way he sold me, I'm like, I knew he was going into it, but the fact he's in this suit, whatever you call that. What is that thing he was in?
The straitjacket thing. Yeah.
He's in this straitjacket thing. And he sells this freaking monologue. And I'm like, my God, he nailed it.
Yeah, it's so funny that you say that because, I've got a bunch of, it all comes around to Superman for me. Like I'm watching that scene and, for me, it's like, you're watching that scene and he's the bad guy and that he's got his own point of view and that it's not great, but then you buy where he's coming from. And to me, it goes back to that scene in Man of Steel where Zod is saying to Superman, we're the last of our kind and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And it just falls flat like a fart in a movie theater where you're just okay, great. That could have been an amazing speech and, set doubt on the whole thing. And they just let it go. And you're absolutely right. Mads Mikkelsen, he sells that. He is wow, this guy is a bad dude, but he has his own point of view and he's got to sort of express it. I love that moment.
And he's really tearing up. I was is that the eye makeup?
I was wondering that too. Yeah.
They didn't blink. They didn't blink, did they?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that was an intense scene. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will be the dissenting voice here that Marvel still can't figure out what to do with their villains. I thought he was great. I thought Mads Mikkelsen did the best anyone has been able to do with a Marvel villain role.
Even more outside than Tom of Loki. Hiddleston? Even more than Loki?
Outside of Loki. Okay. Outside of Loki. Okay. Loki's the only other villain that they've created that is actually interesting to watch.
Or the Kingpin? The Kingpin. Goal. The Kingpin. The Kingpin.
Okay.
Come on, he's interesting.
But all the movie villains are largely the same.
Yeah.
They are largely guys in makeup who generally seem to have a good reason to destroy the world, but then they just want to destroy the world.
Wait a minute. What about General Ross from that Ed Norton Incredible Hulk movie?
But, here's the thing is it's interesting that this has become a complaint, because I agree that the villain should be really spectacular, but I think in these Marvel movies they tend to focus more on the heroes. And one of the complaints of like the Tim Burton Batman movie, or even a lot of superhero movies, is that the villain becomes more interesting than the hero. And you're sort of like, like Batman, that first Burton movie, it could easily just be called Joker the movie. You know what I mean?
So I
sort of appreciate that the hero is coming to the forefront and becoming just as interesting or more interesting than any villain could be. But I think you're right, Jay. But I think part of the reason is that so many of like the great Marvel villains, like Magneto, Doctor Doom, you know, they're taken up by other movie contracts. Like, I guess the Avengers have like Kang and stuff, but like,
they haven't introduced Kang, who is great. And I hope they get to Kang.
Yeah, it would be great.
I'd rather have Kang than Thanos.
So do I. Yeah, I agree.
Just me.
I agree.
But it's just it was good, but it just is always a hole. I mean, the last one, Baron Zemo.
Was
pretty good, and again managed to be compelling and interesting as a character. It's just like with Stellius it was no Chris Eccleston in The Dark World.
Yeah,
let's just count our lucky stars.
Well, I think what we're dealing with too is they don't have charisma. I think that's the biggest thing. It's like there's not a lot of flair to the villains, except for maybe Loki and the Kingpin. I think that what you're seeing is that they are sort of developing these like really interesting plots, and they are putting actors in those roles who can emote and sort of put forward that tragic feeling of like, this is why I'm doing it. But there's not a lot of flair. Like even Ultron, I would agree with you. Like Ultron should have been a raving maniac. Like Ultron to me should have been the scariest thing that you had ever seen, you know, in a movie. And that just fell flat for me. You know what I mean? I think you're right, Jay, that Marvel really does need to work on its villains, because we do need, and I honestly, like I was having this discussion with somebody at work today, you know, and this leads back to sort of the buttons at the end that Corey was talking about. Like Thanos, like I don't even care like anymore. Like Thanos has barely, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has got to give us some Thanos action, because at this point it's like, what's the big deal? Like, what has he done? He hasn't done anything. Like, who cares? Like, why do I care about this guy? When he shows up in like Infinity War or whatever, nobody's going to care, because now they've made some reference to, you know, Thor shows up at one of the buttons at the end and they're talking about like, help us find Odin. And I'm like, but wait, at the last Thor movie, Loki had taken over for Odin and was pretending to be Odin. So did something else happen? Did we miss a movie? Like now they're looking for Odin. I don't understand.
I feel like that scene, much like the one from the end of Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Was it Age of Ultron? Oh, no. Whichever one had
the Winter Soldier had the
scene where like they're talking about the Accords is actually a scene from the middle of Thor the Dark World.
Okay.
As opposed to happening before Thor the Dark World.
Oh, that makes sense.
Editor notes on these movies, you know.
Exactly.
That's true.
But I was just excited because I'm like, ooh, Doctor Strange is going to be in Thor the Dark World. Now I'm more interested. You know? It already has Hulk, and I'm like, okay, great. So now it's going to have Doctor Strange, and I'm like, okay, I'm on board.
The Defenders.
Because weren't they? Yeah, they were the original Defenders,
right? That's right,
Not Thor, but Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange.
Valkyrie the second round, or?
I don't know. I don't remember, I remember she was in there. Ghost Rider was in there too, right?
Well, he was much later.
Oh, okay.
He was like the new champions, I think, with like Black Widow.
Oh, the champions. Okay, yeah, I gotcha. I'm getting a little confused. yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting point, Jay, because I didn't even think that maybe that was like in you know, like the next door movie, you know what I mean? That was part of it. Cause there was definitely a part of me was like, hold on a minute. No.
Yeah.
Loki is Odin right thing. Now. You know what I mean? So,
Doctor Strange definitely takes the movie itself covers the most amount of time. So it is hard to be like, where does this fit? Like, when does the movie start? Where is that in comparison with all the other movies? Like, I need a chronology, a timeline.
Yeah. Well, they're definitely aware of the Avengers, because at one point he says, like, while the Avengers guard against, like, the physical threats, we guard against, like, you know, so there's definitely some Avengers action going on, you know.
And at the beginning of the movie, they show Avengers Tower.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Stark Tower.
So Stark Tower is, and it's definitely there as Avengers Tower. Right. So it's at the very least after the first
Avengers. Movie. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I really hope that we definitely get a little bit more of a sort of upper crust Doctor Strange in the movies that come, because much as I appreciate the humor and everything, there is a bit of Doctor Strange's character in the comics that I was missing a little bit. Like, you know, because Doctor Strange is always kind of come across as, like, you know, the one who shows up and is like, all right, I'm ready to educate everyone. Like, you know what I mean?
I felt like we got that in that Thor button.
Think so?
I definitely felt that, because he just seemed even more comfortable in his skin, and he was the way he was dealing with Thor was hysterical. Mm-hmm. I felt we started to get that there, where it's like, oh, okay, good. Now he's going to just get more and more serious when it comes to his craft, because he's just this, you know, he just loves knowledge and he's going to keep going. And the fact that they gave him those, you know, the gauntlets he was wearing.
The gloves. Yeah. Oh, I was like,
God.
Yes.
Like, I was like, what? Oh, it's great.
Actually, there may be some Kirby crackle on those gloves in the next movie.
Yeah.
Those gloves actually were a neat touch, because the whole thing of his hands, again, it's like this thing that comics we never thought about, you know, in the comics, none of the creators ever thought about, is like, yeah, his origin story is his hands get wrecked. And so after that, nobody ever thought about what his hands look like. And throughout the movie, we keep seeing these shots of all the scars and everything. And so it totally makes sense that he wore these gloves to cover him up. And I thought I loved just the way when they redo these origins, they really think about the origins and what they mean for the character going forward. Not just, okay, now he's a superhero. Okay, great. Now he can be the prototype that we know. It's like, no, this informs his character from here on out.
And that's a good call.
Just like Iron Man's heart is like always constantly an issue. And like in the comics, it's like essentially forgot about for years and decades. You know, so I love these things of like, yeah, this is part of the character, and it doesn't go away when they become the hero.
Yeah. It's interesting that the gloves are a really good call out, because I mean, I saw them and I was like, oh, the gloves, you know what I mean? And I definitely noticed that there was no Kirby crackle or like, I always used to think they were like salamander. Like I didn't know like what that pattern was, but I was really happy to see that. And I mean, look, I'm still blown away that we have, because I was talking to somebody and I was like, if this movie was made in the 90s, there would be some executive who was like, well, first of all, we have to do something about that name, right? He can't be Stephen Strange, Doctor Strange. That's lame. And can we get rid of the cloak? Can he be wearing a suit, like maybe like a magician suit? Or maybe he should be like a street magician, you know what I mean? Like maybe he just wears like a hoodie, you know? And I'm just like, I'm so like happy that you've got the cloak, you've got the tunic, you've got the sort of, you know, you don't have the Shakespeare in the Park leggings or whatever, but like the mustache, the graying temples, like I love that they just embrace all that. And again, it's just like a testament to how great Marvel can be with these things, that, you know, they're dropping like little things in there. Like, I can't even tell you how excited I was when I saw those like Mads Mikkelsen's people being sucked into the dark dimension and turning into those creatures that you saw in like those Ditko. Like, I was like, oh my God, are we going to get more of that? Because I want to see like hordes of them, like just pouring through the, you know, the opening of the dark dimension coming to Earth, you know, because they actually made them kind of look scary. To me, it's just astounding that they keep being able, like, I know that there's like a superhero fatigue kind of setting in. And there definitely is for me where a lot of those DC shows are kind of like sitting on my DVR and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get to it. But like the Marvel movies, for some reason for me, they're just like a recharge. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, this is why I like this. You know what I mean? And I don't know how they do it. They just keep reminding me of like the fun that I used to have reading the comic books. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love what you said about the name too, because that was a really recurring motif actually throughout the whole movie. I think culminated in this amazing Laurel and Hardy level exchange of of like Mr. Doctor. Mr. Doctor? It's strange, actually. I suppose it is.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That was great. It's great stuff. Well, it's funny. The one thing that I really wanted to talk about, too, was the Marvel logo in the beginning.
I noticed that.
It was very hip. Very hip.
Yeah, but there's a part of me that made me sad because it used to be a direct reference to comic books, and now they're just referencing their movies. Like, there's no, like, floating panels. Did you catch that?
I thought it was
There's panels in the beginning, I think. But then
there's panels in the beginnings. It's like they kept part of the original logo and then added this whole other thing where, like, it's so long that I was like, this overdone. Is going on forever. It's too much.
Seemed a little overdone.
I thought so too. I prefer the old one, quite frankly. But you know, they probably looked and said, well, yeah, most of these people are reading these digitally, and the movies are kind of eclipsing what's happening. So I could see they wanted to do that. It was cool, but yeah, it was kind of like, okay, guys.
There's a part of me that wonders, like, if it's all this like infighting and whatever between like the TV and the comics and whatever. And there's a part of me that was like, we got to design a new logo, because honestly, this is also is the first movie that was done without like sort of the Marvel creative committee. You know what I mean? That was kind of like set up, and they set themselves apart from that. And then what's his face, the producer, I'm blanking on the name. You guys know who I'm talking about. Everybody knows who I'm talking
about. Kevin Feige.
Kevin Feige has like pulled himself away from like the rest of the Marvel Corporation. There's a part of me that was like, we need a new logo, and we need it to be just about the movies. And this is us, and we are separating ourselves from the rest of it. I don't know that happened for a fact at all, but there was a part of me that as soon as I saw that new logo come up and it was mostly like movie clips like in there, I was like, you know, the characters in the movies, I was like, oh, come on, guys. I used to love how you used to be so proud of like being comics, you know, coming from comics, you know what I mean? And now I'm just worried that it's just like, we're just the movies. We're going to go off and do our own thing. But I don't know. This was definitely kept a lot of the spirit of the original comics. So I guess I shouldn't have too much to be worried about.
No.
I hear you. I agree that I would rather have more focus, you know, more of a reminder of the comics, but yeah, I just thought it was overdone. Like, it had all this big like orchestration at the end of it.
It's
just the opening title. Calm down.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing I wanted to mention too is the climax. Here I go with my Superman talk again. Really reminded me of the Christopher Reeve Superman movie, where it's like you're not supposed to bend back time. But here we go. It's like the one thing you're not supposed to do, dude. Don't do it. Don't.
And then he does it. I knew he was going
to
do it.
Yeah. And then he does it because he knows he's not supposed to do it. And it's his only way out. And he puts Dormammu kind of in a time loop, which is sort of what Superman does at the end, but it's not explicit. It's just like, wait a minute, if he went back in time and he saved Lois, then there's no reason for him to go back in time. And then, but I don't understand. But then he goes back anyway. And how many times? So there was a little bit of me that was watching it and being like, because I definitely feel like some of the Spider-Man movies made references to those original Christopher Reeve movies at times. And I was wondering if somebody was like, this is kind of like a Superman thing that we're pulling, you know, because it's like, you're not supposed to do that, you know, shades of like Jor-El being like, you are forbidden to, you know. So that was just like my little geek moment where I was like, this is a lot like the first Superman movie. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I don't know. Or maybe there's just
I think they see an opening. They're just like, well, DC's never going to do this right. so we might as well start incorporating
this into the films.
I did see one comment about that from the director, where it's actually turned into that comment I made earlier about, you know, like the no guns, and so they were trying to look for ways of sort of subverting the superhero convention. So they're like, how about instead of the big climax where the city's destroyed, we get there and the city's already destroyed and we put it back. So that was really clever.
I loved all that rebuilding stuff. And hey, we've introduced a character that can literally, I mean, he brings Wong back to life. Like, he literally brings him back to life. And I love that little quip where he's like, you're not supposed to turn back time. And he's like, but I'm okay with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, don't stop now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it really, I mean, that climax was just so fantastic in the way that it stressed, like, rebuilding as opposed to destruction, like pulling everything back together instead of tearing it apart. And, you know, especially, you know, Dormammu, I've come to bargain, where he's like, there's no way to really win, but, you know, I've set you up in a trap, and either you can keep killing me, I'm stuck here just as much as you are. You know, I love that bit of, like, self-sacrifice, and I love that bit of, like, you know, like, we're not going to fight. You're not going to, I'm not going to throw down with you. It was very much like turn the other cheek a little bit, you know, where he was just like, all right, I'm just going to take the abuse, but guess what? You're just going to keep having to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no way out of this. So I really,
and just that shot of him coming over the little orb and landing on the one is over. Yep. It's great.
Yeah. It was really, really some great stuff. I mean, so I think, you know, I have to say that I think that this is one of my favorites. You know, I just the way it played with stuff and how fun it was. I mean, the two Captain America movies and maybe like, you know, the Iron Man are definitely still up there. But like, you know, Winter Soldier and Civil War and the first Iron Man. But I have to say, like, there was a lot to like about it. And I want to go see it again.
Absolutely.
Especially because of the visual stuff, there's so much I want to see again. Like, I love that chase scene around the city of, like,
oh my god,
the Escher paintings, basically. Like, I love that. I want to go watch that again.
Yeah.
It's playing at the Cinerama Dome, not in 3D, too. I'm thinking about the same thing. I didn't think that I would want to, but once I saw that, I was like, yeah, that could be all right.
And the other really great thing is I love how they set up that sort of that story device of like, this is your sling ring, don't use your sling ring. But then they never fall back. They never really fall back on it. Like, he's like, I took his sling ring, it should be fine, right? And it's like, no, it's not fine. He's still going to screw shit up. You know what I mean? Like, in any other movie, like, that was telegraphed a mile away. And it's just so smart of them to be like, we're going to telegraph it, but we're not really going to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to try and set it up, but it really doesn't do, you know, it's ineffective, you know? And I thought that was fantastic, because as soon as she said, like, you don't want to be locked in the mirror dimension without your, I was like, oh god, somebody's gonna get locked in the mirror dimension. You know, and they didn't do it. They didn't, you know, they tried to do it, but then it was like, oh no, it's
backfired.
Just backfired. So there were a lot of like little story things that really worked, and obviously the visual stuff is like astounding, you know. And I guess it depends on what 3D theater you're seeing it in, because I saw one person say it was amazing in 3D, and then I also heard somebody else say it was like the worst 3D. So maybe it was just like where you saw it or how it was projected. Right. You know, I don't know. But I have been told to see it in IMAX 3D if I can. So I may take my kid to go see it in IMAX 3D. I don't know.
The one more thing I want to mention about just subverting the sort of what we expect from superhero movies. I loved that the love interest really wasn't a love interest. They were exes, and they didn't do like the passionate kiss. He got a little peck on the cheek and she just walked out on him, and he was the dump E, and I just loved all that stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, I also love how, you know, just to that point, how Marvel loves to deflate the hard-ass hero moments, you know, like the moment with the cape, And when he's like, dun, 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 the music swelling. And then the cape like wipes the tears. And, you know, everyone's like laughing in the theater. And I love, they do that with Captain America too. They do that with all of them where it's like, there's a one moment where it's like, you know, whatever. Or like Loki being thrown around by the Hulk. You know what I mean? They just, they set up these moments and then they just take a different turn and you find yourself laughing hysterically. And, you know, it's like, this isn't as serious as you thought it was going to be. I just thought that that was fantastic. So, So I think we could all say that we thoroughly enjoyed it, right?
Yes, thoroughly.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
I'm a Marvel fan. And again, I will say that these movies remind me of why I like superhero movies. You know what I mean? I don't come out of them aggravated. And I come out of them like really like, wow, that was fun. This reminds me of kind of not exactly what it was like to read a comic book, but kind of the joy I had when I was younger. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're not Citizen Kane, but, you know, Citizen Kane isn't going to be like throwing buildings around and using a sling ring to go to the Himalayas and all that awesome stuff. Exactly. So this is good for what it is. All right. So this has been our 2016 episode of Doctor Strange, because we did a 1978 one about the pilot a long time ago. This has been our 2016 episode of Part-Time Fanboy Doctor Strange. My name is Christian Horn. I have been on the line with my friends Corey Blake, Jay Holtham, and Ian Scheller. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we will have a new episode of Part-Time Fanboy soon. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.com.